Hello, my fellow change enthusiasts. I'm Molly Angel, host of the Change Manifesto podcast. Welcome back. As you know, the mission of this series is to empower individuals and businesses to liberate themselves from change resistance and effortlessly ignite change. If you're listening into this broadcast and wondering where to start with change for your organization, we've got you covered. Episodes geared to the fundamentals of change management and understanding the change process. These episodes focus on topics like assembling your change team and surfacing resistance. I encourage you to check them out as you're contemplating a new initiative or new project requiring winning the hearts and minds of your team. It's a fact. To realize the ROI of your investment, you need your team to be on board. These episodes are structured to help you uncover the natural resistance to change, identify who needs to be empowered in your change process, and how to learn your change capacity as an organization. You can always go back to listen to these previous episodes, as well as find additional resources on our website, www.angelchangemanagement.com. The Change Manifesto series has taken a bit of a left turn during the quarantine and our slow release from stay-at-home requirements. For the past few episodes, we met with two great change advocates with lots of wisdom and information to share about how to navigate our current circumstances based on their years of experience. Please take a listen to these interviews with my guests, Mike Burt and Jessica Hickey, for great insight on how the pandemic can be put in perspective of other challenging times. Today, as part of the effort to address the level of change that most of us have never experienced in our lifetimes, this episode will explore some historical context to help provide some ideas of where we need to focus our effort to adapt. The context we're going to discuss today has broader implications for our society rather than a single effort focus of change. If you're thinking to yourself that this is quite a diversion from our usual approach, you are right. Yes, you may be on your own change journey, either personally or as a team in an organization. You're like all of us, wondering what the next few months or heck, even the next year holds for us. How do you plan when there are few, if any, road signs along the way? What can you possibly map with any certainty right now? Especially my fellow business owners and project manager listeners, what do we need to know and where are we going to get the information to successfully plan our future state? Well, if my listeners have heard, the past will provide us with much needed intel. Just as we look at our own past performance in guiding and managing change in previous projects, we can look to historical landmarks to understand what influences and systems impact the change is having on our society. You may be thinking, well, we did experience a previous pandemic, so is that a model of understanding? Most likely not. 1918 is too far in the past to be of clear help in guiding us about our business environment. There was no internet, driving technology. Many of the levers in culture and society are entirely different these days. And of course, we don't have the impact of a world war occurring simultaneously. But we do have more near-term events to reflect on. One of the key attributes of change is resistance. Even in the absolute best circumstances, when people understand that things need to evolve, people are resistant to change for a variety of reasons. Having established one way of doing things, we are naturally unwilling to adopt a new way of behavior without the motivation needed to overcome our natural resistance. We are now experiencing societal resistance to the impact of the pandemic. People were initially quite compliant with the stay-at-home orders, and businesses and services dutifully shut down in accordance with government regulations. The lack of information about what we are dealing with seemed daunting, and most people recognized that it was an emergent and urgent situation. However, this has shifted as time has gone on, and the easing of the restrictions have begun to help get our economy back on track. People are emerging from their quarantine cocoon, bleary-eyed from too many video conferences, to try to embrace what they most missed, human connection. In many cases, this is manifested in the resistance to alter or adjust their behavior outside of the quarantine experience. Namely, the strongly recommended, and in some cases, required need to wear a face covering in public spaces, both indoors and outside. Getting a handle on what is happening around us can provide some insight into what we need to understand about our team's current reality. Nothing happens in a vacuum, so what impacts your team is of relevance. Their mood and attitude about their current circumstances can provide you with a window into what might be your best path to engage and unleash them these days. To do this, let's take a look at what we might learn from prior situations where people were asked to do what, in retrospect, seems like an obvious thing to do for our safety, but was resisted at the time. If you have been a listener of previous episodes, or even if you haven't, but you're familiar with the change management field, you probably have some idea when we talk about your change capacity. Change capacity, or change competency, refers to the ability to flexibly adapt your organization to new methods of delivering product or services to the betterment of your customers. Understanding your change capacity is usually based on a survey of your own past projects. Were they well implemented, achieving the envisioned ROI? Or did you struggle with implementation because you missed a step in engaging your team by establishing a clear case for change and supporting them through the process of taking on the change personally? However, it is unlikely that many businesses have experienced the disruption and impact of a pandemic. Perhaps those who survived the devastation of Hurricane Katrina, for example, have some notion of what this looks like. But even in that awful set of circumstances, the end goal was relatively clear, and achieving the motivation of the teams involved to overcome this impact were relatively clear. Rebuild, move on, return to previous operations. Some did use the situation to refine or redefine their process, but the path was not unknown or generally uncertain. This time it's different. The analogy being used for COVID-19 as a type of flu has proven inaccurate and ineffective for public health planning. The contagious nature of this disease process has revealed itself to be almost entirely droplet transmission in nature. That means that wiping down your grocery bags or washing your hands after touching any surfaces outside your home is not as effective a method of avoiding the infection as we thought even a few months ago. The truth of the matter is that the current knowledge points to the avoidance of contact with our fellow human beings, especially when they are talking, coughing, or sneezing. The coronavirus is opportunistic and cannot be negotiated with. The rules of 6 feet of distance and wearing a face mask are the best guesses we have of how to avoid contagion. However, as previously stated, humans and their natural resistance to change come into play here. Let's dive a bit deeper into the implications for our society that this resistance is now surfacing, and what we can learn to understand our team's motivations and challenges with the change. By looking back for examples when we have had similar experience of being required to adopt new personal habits to ensure our safety, we don't have to look far. Seatbelts. You are probably thinking, wait, Molly, everyone uses seatbelts. The evidence is clear. They save thousands of lives every year. I would never get in a car and not buckle up for safety. But did you know that there were articles written in strong resistance to the mandatory use of seatbelts as late as 1987? That was when the state of Michigan was debating the regulations to require click it or ticket, and there was serious opposition to the measure. This was not a one-state issue. Many states battled the same fight to finally enact seatbelt laws. Let me repeat, this was universally resisted in the United States. It was seen as an invasion of personal choice and liberty. Ring a bell? Ralph Nader wrote his book, Unsafe at Any Speed, nearly 20 years earlier, in which he revealed that the American car manufacturers knew of many ways to keep us safer in our cars, but chose not to implement safety features due to cost. One of these options was to install seatbelts. which were invented in the late 1800s and installed on some cars as early as the 1950s. The current estimate is that seatbelts probably save about 15,000 lives annually in the U.S., and sadly, would save another 2,500 if they were used properly 100% of the time. But again, the use of seatbelts was not a clear-cut, no-brainer adoption win. Over the years of debate within the federal government and each state government, again and again, the objection to mandatory seatbelts was that it limited each person's individual liberties. A very strongly and dearly held notion by us Americans, give us liberty or give us death, literally in this case. Some of the specifically cited objections had to do with the faulty notion that seatbelts actually acted as an entrapment device, that you were much safer being thrown from a car during a crash rather than being restrained inside of it, secured by your seatbelt. This belief was very difficult to counter. As with all cherished beliefs, there's a kernel of truth buried in there. Of course, all the evidence we have now clearly establishes that the chances of surviving a car crash are greatly improved by the use of seatbelts. But that is not always the winning argument when there is resistance. What did finally make the difference in adoption of seatbelts? It was legislation. Clearly and unambiguously, we were legislated into behavior that keeps us safe. What is our lesson for the use of social distancing, including the use of face masks in public? As a society, the evidence we have is very clear. One only has to look at cultures where the use of face masks is habitual. Those countries have had a much different experience of the pandemic. They have lower case numbers and far fewer deaths per thousand than we do in the U.S. However, the same argument used to avoid the use of seatbelts is back at play. And to resurface even more early resistance to both seatbelts and the use of face masks, the experience is not pleasant. Having to strap into your car before driving and slap your face mask on before heading out the door are equally distasteful practices. Will we need legislation to force our fellow citizens into the use of face masks in 2020, like we had to back in the 80s to get people over the hump of using seatbelts? This scenario seems likely. Until and unless there is legislation that requires routine and consistent use of face masks, and, not unimportantly, how will that be enforced? Fines? Public censure? The rate of usage will probably stay at the present self-reported rate of 30%. Perhaps the statistics about the effectiveness of masks in keeping us healthy will help, but we should expect that the same forces will be at play as were in the case of seatbelts. Resistance is strong in this case. And fellow changers, what can we draw from this to understand the challenge ahead of us as we look for our way forward? The impact of this environmental change challenge has implications for us all, not just in the arguments between people or even the active resistance and refusal to wear face coverings and observe social distancing. This is something that we will all have to deal with, but understanding the source of the resistance, like in all change initiatives, is the key to developing the way forward. Appreciation for the lack of control people feel now, revealed in resistance to public health efforts to keep us safe, are a lesson for us to review and understand. Why? Because it provides the ultimate path forward to helping our teams adjust and adapt. For example, say you're attempting to change by implementation of new technology or process, improvement in your organization's compliance with social distancing. It's a clear need that the business case is obvious and thoroughly understand by the team. It's change that must be adapted or die time. However, some of the change impacts the public-facing team more than others. If you have employees who will be required to wear a face mask in order to serve your customers, this will produce tension for them. They may themselves have doubts about the value of wearing masks. And again, it's no one's idea of fun to wear a mask for hours at a time. How to address this situation successfully? As with all change management processes, you will need to engage your team in open, transparent discussion, enlisting their help in establishing this process. Being heard, seen, and respected throughout this process will be imperative. They are closest to the situation, so listening to their challenges, such as customers who are upset or unhappy about being required to wear a mask in your establishment, taking out their frustration on your frontline workers, has to be factored into the plan to make this transition successful. Fortunately, there are many industries to learn from. Healthcare, life sciences, heck, even chip manufacturers have long histories of wearing protective gear to learn from. The starting point for all these industries and the use of protective gear, such as face masks, is essentially the same. Safety. This must be our North Star as we proceed forward. Reopening our economy and establishing our economic health depends on the health of our fellow citizens, including our teams and customers. The change we need to be aware of and successfully establish is to ensure your team that you keep their health and safety foremost in the plans. At the end of the day, what is happening all around us is going to impact your ability to make and establish the change needed to successfully navigate through these uncertain times. So that's what we will do for the next couple of episodes. Look at our environment and historical clues to help us establish a course for our teams and organizations to move forward. There are many issues of change that we'll explore. How do you plan in an unknown and uncertain future? There's a liberating structure for that. As you remember, we have talked about liberating structures on this podcast frequently. They are lightweight but extremely effective facilitation tools to lead a group through complex situations. We'll delve into the agreement and uncertainty matrix to help us establish a way to think about a future that cannot be foretold. Thanks for joining me on this episode to talk about our environmental change and new models of change today. I look forward to our meeting again soon. Please check out the website www.angelchangemanagement.com to find more information and materials to help you on your change journey. Until next time, I'm Molly Angel, and this is the Change Manifesto Podcast. As always, just remember, it doesn't matter if you want to go by wagon train or by rocket ship, I can help you with change.